Welcome to the Sutlippian Report, the place where the news is never hidden and the truth wins every time. Today there is a lot of news, and I'm still trying to catch up on it. It's been a busy, busy week on my end. But let's start with the Word of God. It's a Christian show, so we start with a reading from the Bible. This is from 1 John chapter 1, verses 8 to 10. If we say that we have no sin, we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not in us. If we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. If we say that we have not sinned, we make him a liar, and his word is not in us. When you go out to share the good news, you meet some interesting people. Still, with that said, it is a rare individual who will claim he was without sin. But not that this is a reflective statement. It is about the group that John is with, the group the reader is part of. It is for the reader to think on. This is for the believer. People sometimes look at Christians as believing they can no longer be sinful, that they are above sin, the hoity-toity nose in the air type that drive the average person mad. It's a surprise to those that see Christians as believing they are above it all when they hear these words, especially when you point out it is reflective. It is Christians saying it of themselves. What a statement this is, that the person who makes such a claim not only deceives himself or herself, but has no truth within. Think about it. There is a good reason that this statement is made. If we say we have not sinned, we make him, God, a liar, and his word is not in us. Think about that. But for the sinner who knows and believes in the wonder-working power of Jesus' blood shed on the cross, there is a great promise that he who is faithful and true will forgive you. All it takes is your confession to him. Forgiveness from God does not mean that there is no penalty attached to this sin on this earth. To claim to be without sin is a claim that God is a liar. In order for everything to be right in this world, that is the one thing our God cannot be. In order for our God to be truth and for his word to be important beyond description, he must be and is the living embodiment of truth. Dear Lord Jesus, Lord, I am a sinner in need of your forgiveness. I'm one who loves you. But I must admit my own unworthiness of your great love. Lord, work on me. Help me to become that great example of you so that others may see you in everything that I do. In Jesus' name, amen. So this week has been filled with news. I don't think I can even get through it. We will find out because I don't think I have it all written down. It's just so much to go. We're going to start talking about China and Joe Dementia, or we can call him Joe Biden. China invaded Taiwan. Invading Taiwan was a topic I discussed with Brad Johnson, the president of the American Intelligence Reform, back on April 29th. You know, it was more of a hypothetical. Would China attack Taiwan? We were talking about it because, you know, there was stuff in the air making that seem possible. Part of that is the actions of the current president of the United States, Joe Dementia. This week, China released a 3-stage plan for invasion. I want you to think about that. It released this to the public. Again, we're talking about a communist country. The question is, what is their purpose? And this becomes extremely, extremely important when you start thinking about this. China doesn't do things like this that they're going to attack. This is likely in some way misinformation. Or maybe they're just waiting to see what countries will do about it. This becomes incredibly important. Why? Because the truth of the matter is, people can't, nobody responds and says, uh-oh, that's bad news, or you shouldn't do that, we've got a problem. Because China will just do what it does. This is crazy. They want to see what we are going to do. That's the truth of it. That's the whole reason for this. They want to see what we, the United States, are going to do. If we release this to the public, what will other countries think? Now, this is where it gets really interesting. I want you to think about that. If a country, you call a country, if you simply just do what you're, sometimes it's just, it sounds silly. Why would they release this? You have to ask yourself, you know, why would they do this? Well, once you start looking at these things and asking yourself those questions, it becomes important. The simple reason is we put things out. Sometimes we just want to hear what others think. I can't explain how important that is. You know, waiting to see what people think. It's all important. Very important. So that is the real reason behind this. So let's get into this article. This is by The Postmillennial, written by James Anthony. The Chinese state-controlled magazine, Naval and Merchant Ships, published an article detailing a three-stage plan to invade Taiwan involving ballistic missiles, fighter jet attacks, and amphibious landings on Taiwan's beaches. Now, if you were here back in April when I was discussing this with Brad Johnson, we were talking about those amphibious landing crafts that they already have. I mean, they could do this today. That's the thing. They have created the Navy. They have created the ships, and it is all possible today. Releasing this, it makes it more real and more possible and more likely. Are they waiting for someone to say, hey, you know, and just put, you know, say we're going to get involved if you do this. Has Biden said anything? No, he's silent. So this is where it's going to get interesting. Tensions continue to flare in the region as Chinese fighters have been breaching Taiwanese airspace almost daily for months now. The U.S. and Japan have been reportedly holding joint military exercises, and the magazine article is believed to possibly have been a subtle way of responding on China's part, according to the U.S. Sun. The U.S. is a staunch ally of the nation of Taiwan, and a defensive pact between the two nations was enacted many decades ago on March 3, 1955. It was replaced with a less intensive agreement called the Taiwan Relations Act in 1979, which remains in effect today. China's non-elected head of state, Xi Jinping, stoked the fires of rhetoric recently, as he said during a recent speech celebrating 100 years of communism in China. Resolving the Taiwan question and realizing China's complete reunification is a historic mission and an unshakable commitment of the Communist Party of China. We must take resolute action to utterly defeat any attempt towards Taiwan's independence and work together to create a bright future of national rejuvenation. No one should underestimate the resolve, the will, and the ability of the Chinese people to defend the national sovereignty and territorial integrity. China has refused to recognize the existence of Taiwan as an independent nation ever since the communists took over the mainland in 1949, despite the fact that Taiwan is recognized as such and has its own currency, government, military, diplomatic corps, and passports. Think about that. Could we be watching a new era of world war is another question with that. That's one of the things I asked when I was talking with Brad Johnson. I mean, could this Democrats will say they are not promoters of war. They always say that. What we've seen is quite the opposite, and that gets a little scary. Let's go back a little bit more domestic and talk about how are things happening here. Well, there was an election count result that came in from Georgia, that is a little bit interesting. It's a little different than what people would probably expect. This comes from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Some ballots initially double counted in Fulton County before recount. This is, again, Georgia we're talking about. This is by Mark Neese. A duplicate write-in vote for singer Kanye West was a big clue that some absentee ballots had been counted twice in Fulton County. Digital ballot images made public under Georgia's new voting law show nearly 200 ballots, including one for Kanye West, that election officials initially scanned two times last fall before recount. there is no indication any vote for president was counted more than once in official results. The discovery of identical ballots provides evidence to back up allegations of problems in the presidential election, but on a relatively small scale, it had no bearing on the final certified count. A group of voters seeking to prove the election was fraudulent say double counting is just the beginning of what they hope to find. I guess I am one of those that they're talking about would be looking at 200 in, you know, I want you to think about that, 200 in the county. Again, Donald Trump lost total by 12,000 in the state. I believe it was 12,000. And I want you to think about that. 12,000 votes in the count in the Georgia, all right? If 200 votes were in this one county, just by fraudulent recounting of, I mean, double counting of ballots, how much closer is this election? I mean, it definitely has a lot of reasons. You definitely have a lot of reasons to question things. I have to say, you know, and I'm waiting to see. Now, again, this article is not written by someone who will be favorable to Trump, but you have to ask questions. You have to watch and what is actually happening. Pay attention to the stuff that they're going to come out with in Arizona. I think they're holding back for a reason. I'm really curious what that reason is. My thoughts are it's much worse than most of us think. What does that mean? Well, that there is probably something a lot more important that we're talking about here. Let's get into some of the other things that happened this week in the United States. Did you know there was a jihadi botched abduction by Iranians here in New York State? No, I live in New York State, and when I hear stuff like this, I go, wait a minute, you know, how did I miss that one? Well, I'd heard about it, and I just didn't pay enough attention. So this is actually a New York Times article by Benjamin Weiser. It came out a couple days ago. An Iranian-American journalist living in Brooklyn, who has been a sharp critic of the Iranian government, was the target of international kidnapping plot orchestrated by an intelligence network in Iran. An intelligence network in Iran? Probably the intelligence network in Iran. What are we talking about? Oh, straight. Yeah, straight to the Iranian government. They're a little afraid to say that in the New York Times. I question why they would say an intelligence network to the Iranian government. In an indictment, it says, unsealed in federal court in Manhattan, four Iranians were charged with conspiring to kidnap the journalist and author Masih Alinejad. Ms. Alinejad was not identified by prosecutors, but confirmed in an interview that she was the intended target of the plot. Last year, Ms. Alinejad wrote in a newspaper article that Iranian government officials had unleashed a social media campaign calling for her abduction. The four defendants all live in Iran and remain at large, the prosecutors said. Identifying one of them, Alizara Shavar Farahani, who was 50, as an Iranian intelligence officer, and the three Oaks. Now they say it. Now they come out and say, is the government, why couldn't they say it to begin with? Are they hiding something? Are they hiding a relationship with the government of Iran that they will support them? You have to sit here and wonder why they're protecting them in this article. This article continues. Iranian intelligence official and three others as Iranian intelligence assets. A fifth defendant accused of supporting the plot but not participating in the kidnapping conspiracy was arrested in California. The indictment describes a plot that includes attempts to lure Ms. Alinejad as a American citizen to a third country to capture her and forcibly render her to Iran. The intelligence official, Mr. Farahani, and his network used private investigators to surveil, photograph, and video record Ms. Alinejad and members of her household in Brooklyn. The extensive surveillance Mr. Farahani's network procured, including the use of live high-definition video feed depicting Ms. Alinejad's home. This is not some far-fetched movie plot, William Sweeney Jr. said, the head of the FBI's New York office said in a statement. Audrey Strauss, the U.S. attorney in Manhattan, said a U.S. citizen living in the United States must be able to advocate for human rights without being targeted by foreign intelligence operatives. The indictment comes as a precarious moment in the fraught relationship between the United States and Iran. Fraught, well, it's only fraught because, you know, Joe Dimentia's back to the same workable theories that Obama had. He's doing the same things. President Biden, late last month, ordered airstrikes against Iranian-backed militias in Syria and Iraq, telling Congress that he acted to defend American military personnel and deter Iranian attacks. At the same time, the two countries are working towards a resurrection of a 2015 deal to limit Iran's nuclear power. Ms. Alina Jad, who hosts a program called Tablet on Voice of America Persian, a U.S. government-owned broadcaster, has been harshly critical of the nuclear deal. In a rephoned interview on Tuesday evening, Ms. Alina Jad said that learning details of the plot was shocking to her, but that she had told her husband and son not to panic. That shows they're not scared of America. Scared of me, she said, adding, otherwise they would not send anyone here to kidnap me. In a 2018 essay in the New York Times, Ms. Alina Jad described her decision to leave Iran a decade earlier. She wrote, as a journalist in Iran, I often got into trouble, exposing the regime's mismanagement and corruption until eventually my press pass was revoked, she wrote. I was often threatened with arrest or worse for writing articles critical of former President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Ultimately, I was forced to flee my homeland in 2009. According to the indictment in 2018, the Iranian government tried to pay relatives of Ms. Alina Jad, who live in Iran, to invite her to travel to a third world country, apparently for the purpose of having her arrested or detained and taken to Iran to be imprisoned. Her relatives did not accept the offer, the indictment said. The Iranian government began plotting to abduct her from the United States as early as June last year, the indictment said, with the goal of silencing her of Iran's human rights abuses, discrimination against women, and use of arbitrary imprisonment. Yeah, they're upset. They're upset that someone would critique them. Now, we keep hearing about Iran being, you know, this doing, this is crazy. I mean, this has been happening for years, people. It's not something new. Why we sit back and pretend this stuff is not going on, I don't understand. I really don't. It bothers me to think that people don't pay attention, that this is, they don't see that this is not, this hasn't been happening for a while. There are Iranian agents here in the States. They do go after former Iranians. They do go after them. We've been documenting this for years, decades. But they're writing like this like it's something new. No one referred to any historical events with this in that article, which is sad. And this is supposed to be journalism. These are things I cannot comprehend. Why are they not telling the truth about things like this? This is stuff we need to be paying attention to. What are they hiding? Let's get into this other article here that happened this week in Minnesota. Now, Pamela Geller wrote an article this week. A machete-wielding Muslim stabs four women and released on the same day. What does that mean? You release a guy on the same day if he stabs four people. It means he can go out and do it again and no one will care. That's scary. She writes, one woman was left unable to lift one of her arms and another will be on crutches for a time following a knife attack at Northwest Rochester apartment complex early Wednesday. Oh, this is Rochester, Minnesota. And yes, Minnesota. Yep. Okay. Omar Abubakar Mani made his first appearance in Olmsted County District Court Thursday morning on three. This is last Thursday, actually, on three felony charges, second degree assault and two counts of first degree assault. Judge Lisa Hain ordered Mani released on conditions that he submit to electrical monitoring and not use or possess any firearms, dangerous weapons. Okay, he used a knife. Does he need a gun? No, she didn't outlaw him owning a knife. Unconditional bail was set at $75,000. Rochester police in Minnesota were called about 2:40 in the morning Wednesday to Cascade Creek Apartments, 421 6th Avenue, Northwest, by a person who reported that people were stabbing each other on the building's second floor and that two people were badly cut with a machete, according to the criminal complaint. A search warrant was filed with the court, indicates the police took a silver kitchen knife and a long knife sheath black from the apartment. Officers arrived to find four women screaming in the hallway and blood smeared on the walls. Rochester Police Captain Cassie Mullane said Thursday morning that a 19-year-old Rochester woman's leg was cut and a 20-year-old woman's arm was cut in the assault. The court documents state that long, deep gash in the 19-year-old's leg was deep enough to expose fatty tissue, and the woman was unable to walk due to the injury and would require crutches for an unspecified amount of time. The cut to the 20-year-old woman's arm required surgery repair and was deep enough to cut through her muscle. Officers arrived to find the four women. Now, think about this. They left the guy out. It's like, what, you know, let him out that day? You got to sit there and wonder what's going on when you let criminals go free so easily. These are things I cannot comprehend. You should not be able to accept this. This is dangerous stuff. I don't understand why anyone would ever feel okay with them just putting out this misinformation, this is crazy stuff. Think about that. They're letting people go who just committed violent acts that could harm someone. So let the violent guy go back on the street. Do you really think he's not going to do anything? It's not even a question whether he did this or not. That's the problem we have here. It's not even a question. This is the problem. I mean, I can't grasp that they would not be paying attention to this. That they would just let people go that have committed these violent acts. I'm seeing it happen here in New York State. And then police are just, they feel like giving up. You arrest the guy, he's back out doing the exact same thing 10 minutes later, half hour later, a day later. What reason does he have to stop? He's not fearing jail because he's not going to jail. He's not feeling being locked up because he's definitely not being locked up for more than a few minutes. This is scary. This next one, just keep going here. This next article comes from a Muslim in Missouri who threatened to blow up a building he works in. I want you to listen closely to this. Tell me what's missing. If you don't, I'll tell you what's missing. All right. Versailles man charged with making a terrorist threat. It comes from KRCGTV.com by Dan Claxton. This came out a few days ago on the 12th. A Versailles man is in custody in the Morgan County Jail charged with making a terroristic threat by allegedly telling two co-workers on July 8th that he was going to blow up their workplace. According to court documents, 33-year-old Yassin Boussain told a co-worker, "When I come back, I'll blow you up." Asked what he meant, he replied, "Gates," meaning Gates Corporation in Versailles, where Boussain works. He made a few more comments about blowing up and shooting up the facility at one point, asking co-workers how fast they thought he could do it. The two employees who heard the comments then told their supervisor who reported the incident to the police. Morgan County Prosecutor Dustin Dunkley charged Boussain with one count of making a terroristic threat in the second degree. Missouri law defines the crime in a part of as communicating an express or implicit threat to cause an incident or condition involving danger to life. Threats are not typically protected speech under the First Amendment. Much of the case will depend on how serious the threat was. The probable cause statement in the case indicates that Boussain may have been joking. A 2003 Supreme Court case ruled that true threats or violence are not protected by the First Amendment, but threats may not be punished if a reasonable person would understand them as obvious hyperbole. However, in another Supreme Court case, the justice ruled that the speaker need not actually intend to carry out the threat for it to be a crime. Boussain is being held in the Morgan County Jail on a $100,000 bond. He has a bond hearing at July 20th at 9 a.m. in Morgan County Courthouse. So he could be free in a few more days for threatening to blow up his workplace and kill others there. You know, you hear these things. Again, this is the United States. Yes, and if you didn't catch what was missing, they hid the fact that here we have another Muslim. It's actually in the name, but if you don't pay close attention, it sounds French. Well, that's the issue. They're not telling you these things. These are things to pay attention to. Also going on this week in the United States, a DA who was investigated for professional ethics charges for his comments on Islam and homosexuality. He's been found to be professional. Okay. Part of the problem when Islam wants to raise its ugly head and say, look, you know, you're doing something wrong by talking about us. You're telling the truth or something like that. They don't want you to do that. So, again, if you're telling the truth, you can't get in trouble when you are a lawyer, when you're saying the truth. This is what it's getting to. We have to speak the truth. So this article comes from Fox 17, WZTY Nashville. A Tennessee district attorney previously under fire for comments on homosexuality and Islam has been cleared by the Board of Professional Responsibility following a two-year investigation. Coffee County District Attorney Craig Northcutt was under investigation following comments in 2019, which Northcutt wrote on social media. Here's what he wrote. Islam, he described Islam as evil, violent, and against God's truth, and likened being Muslim to being part of the KKK, Aryan Nation, etc. He was also recorded in 2018 stating he did not believe in gay marriage and would not prosecute domestic violent crimes involving homosexual couples. According to the video, which circulated in 2018 and prompted a letter from other attorneys calling for his resignation, Northcutt stated, the social engineers on the Supreme Court decided that we now have homosexual marriage. I disagree with them. What do I do with domestic assaults? On the one hand, I don't prosecute them because I don't recognize it as a marriage. On the other hand, if I don't prosecute them, then the sinner, the immoral guy, gets lesser punishment. What do you do? Well, that's the reason why where I came down to my evaluation, what he writes was, he says, was the reason that there's extra punishment on domestic violence is to recognize and protect the sanctity of marriage. And he says, and as he said, there's no marriage to protect, so he doesn't prosecute them as domestic violence. He's not saying he doesn't prosecute them. He says he just doesn't charge them with domestic violence. So that's, you know, he's not saying he doesn't prosecute. That's actually important to understand. Northcutt, who refused to be censured by the BPR and challenged the ruling, now says the matter has been dropped after he was granted a motion to dismiss the complaint against him without appeal from the BPR. Northcutt says he stands by his comments in a public statement calling the investigation against him an attack. It was alleged that he says I'm unfit to serve as district attorney and to remain an attorney in Tennessee because I taught the word of God regarding homosexuality from the pulpit of a church in Houston, Texas at a Bible conference, primarily for pastors sponsored by a seminary, as well as my expressing my theological beliefs regarding Islam while communicating on another individual's Facebook post in my personal capacity. Amazingly, this simple exercise of my God-given constitutionally protected rights so upset certain groups of people that I made local, national, and international news and had to fight their efforts to have me disbarred for the last 2 years. After fighting the investigation successfully, Northcutt says the BPR never alleged the mishandling of a specific case and admitted under oath they couldn't find a single case that I or my office mishandled. Northcutt thanked his supporters, calling on his Christian brethren to stand firm against what he calls attacks on belief. Be courageous and bold in the face of growing assaults against us in this country. Yes, he is right. Be bold. Stand up. this is crazy. I don't want to tell you that you are going to be assaulted as a Christian when you do what's right. I have to be careful where I am, where I'm working these days. You have to tell, you have to tell the truth, period. You have to make that stand as a Christian. You have to do what is right. This is crazy. And I say that, I'm reporting news and I get people and I write books and I write articles and people are like, aren't you scared? I look at it this way. As long as you are telling the truth, you're not making crap up. You're not pulling in imaginary tales. You're not playing with conspiracy theories. No, as long as you are telling the truth, you can't get in trouble for telling the truth. What do I mean by that? Oh, people can get upset with you. They can get mad at you. They can even cause you physical harm for telling the truth. But what I'm saying is you can't get in trouble for is this is a country that is protected by laws. And when you are telling the truth, guess what? I mean, they can try and sue you, but they'll lose. Guess what? You can countersue them for defamation of character, and you can win. So don't give up. Do not give up. This is just, this stuff is so insane. I sit here and I ponder how some of these things can just be so, and I keep laughing at some of these. How can we not know some of these things? All right, so let me see if I can to work. I'm going to go to an article and I'm going to talk about it, and I'm going to see if I can play this, play the video on this article. I mean, just say that this is fascinating. MRCTV, if you haven't gone there before, please do. You can donate to the cause. MRCTV does excellent work monitoring. It monitors news stations and catches things. Now, this particular article I'm pulling up today is remarkable in the fact that it could be an expression of God against BLM. I mean, I don't know, but it sure seems that way. This article by MRCTV came out yesterday. It's by Brittany Hughes. It's titled, Lightning Strikes Reduces Toledo George Floyd's Mural to Scorched Rubble. A mural of George Floyd painted on a wall in Toledo, Ohio, was struck by lightning Tuesday before it collapsed, authorities say. Witnesses reportedly told the Toledo Fire and Rescue Department they saw a lightning strike hit the area at around 4:30 p.m. on Tuesday, just before the brick facade of the wall came down. Local station WTVG was able to confirm via Doppler that a lightning strike had in fact been recorded in the area around that time. The wall, part of a building that used to house a local bar, has as a memorial to Floyd that was painted as a memorial to Floyd in July of 2020, 2 months after Floyd's death. The city of Toledo has already said they'll work with the artist to reconstruct the mural or to remove it to a different area. The building's owner is now working to tear down the rest of the existing memorial, as most of it is now laying in a pile of scorched rubble on the ground. So what's that God's talking about this event? I don't know. I can't say for sure. I am not him. Okay, this next one I was looking for, this is the one that has the article with them. Peter Ducey took a week off from the White House. And when he came back, Peter Ducey doesn't play games. I'm liking this guy more and more and more. Some of the things he does in interviewing, now this is where it gets interesting. Peter Ducey, and I think I'm going to have a problem finding it, darn it. You'll have to skip and go on. Bummer. Let's see what I can find, if it's here or not. This is the joy of live radio. Sometimes you get what you want, sometimes you don't. Okay, I don't think I'm going to get there, but it's worth a try. So And let's get there. Let's take a look. This is the fun of, again, live radio. Sometimes things work, sometimes they don't. Here we go. I'm going to try and play this article. We'll see what happens. Play this video. So hold on, I got to move the mic.
Danny had a few days to think about it. Does this White House still think the protests in Cuba are happening because people are upset about a rise in COVID cases there, or is there some thought maybe given to the possibility that they are protesting because they are sick of communism?
Well, Peter, first I would say communism is a failed ideology, and we certainly believe that. It has failed the people of Cuba. They deserve freedom. They deserve a government that supports them, whether that is making sure they have health and medical supplies, access to vaccines, or whether they have economic opportunity and prosperity.
And there are protesters now in this country who are chanting as these protests in Cuba are going on, where is Biden? So where is he? What is he doing to protect these people who are rising up against the leaders of this failed experiment?
Well, first, he is certainly advocating for and speaking out as we've put out a statement, multiple statements.
Why is the Secretary of State Blinken trying to address human rights in the U.S. by inviting experts, UN experts from Cuba and China here?
Well, first I would say that the Secretary put out an extensive statement on why he is holding, why he believes that we need to play a role in lifting up and pushing countries to do better on human rights, on ending systemic racism in their countries.
You just rattled off all these problems with Cuba. They've got dissenters disappearing down there. In China, they've got a million religious minorities in internment camps. Why are they going to come here and tell us how to improve our country?
I certainly don't think that's the format of the event, but lifting up and elevating human rights.
You have to sit there and laugh at some of this. She's clueless. Now, I have to sit there and marvel some of this. You sit there and wonder, how can she be so clueless? This woman is dangerous in many ways because of her cluelessness. Or is it worse because she hides so much? In another interview, she actually hides information that Biden is, you know, basically she partially claims that the reason people are leaving is because they don't like the government. She refuses to say it is communism. She hides from that. I want you to think about that. This press secretary of the United States will not say something negative about communism. I mean, that's actually what happened in this interview. She refused to say something negative against communism. What's going on, people, that this kind of stuff is going on? And then the people from communist countries are going to come here and comment on how well we are and how we are a racist government. So they're inviting communist countries where they imprison people for not agreeing with them or kill them or make them disappear in the dead of night. And that's okay, but, you know, it's okay. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, that's okay by Biden and Jen Psaki. But, yeah, I hope you understand what I'm saying. This is the permissibility that's happening. It's scary. It's scary to think that this is happening in the White House. But then, as I've been saying, we have Joe Dementia in the White House. Oh, wow. Thank God we have men like, you know, Pete Ducey there at least asking those questions. Here's another one I want to talk about. Let me see if I can get this other tape up just a minute. I'm going to play in a bit. So let's try this. Leo Holman, I love his work. I really do. He's a great man of God. And I'll tell you this.
If you get a chance, you need to go to leoholman.com. If you can, please do support his work. He is an outstanding, outstanding writer. He wrote this article earlier this week. It says, what should you do when federal agents arrive at your door with questions about your personal health decisions? So Joe Biden announced this week he's commissioned a surge response team from the federal government to enter communities and neighborhoods with low vaccination rates to the point of knocking on doors and pressuring people to get vaccinated. Okay, we're going to substitute something for vaccinated, whenever you hear that, gene therapy, because that is exactly what Moderna and Pfizer consider this, gene therapy. His press secretary, Jen Psaki, said these federal agents are only coming to our doors because they care deeply about us and don't want us to die from the CCP virus. Quote, we have information they need on how safe and accessible the vaccine is, Psaki said in her daily press briefing Tuesday, July 6th. Is this why roughly half of America refuses to get the injection? Because it's not accessible? Again, the word was refuse. Surely it's nothing to do with a dismal safety record with record numbers of reported deaths and injuries and the seemingly limitless pressure to get the shots with multinational corporations. So think about this. Are they even doing something called informed consent with these shots? So Leo continues. Why, for instance, is the military considering mandating the gene therapy as early as September when only about 20 U.S. service members have died from COVID? Oh, did you catch that? Only 20 died from, that's all that have died from COVID, but they're going to mandate it all the way across? Why are the children being encouraged to get the shot when so few have fallen ill or died from COVID? This is not the first virus to come along, nor is the most deadly, but never has there been this level of pressure on people to accept a specific medical treatment, let alone one that lacks full FDA approval and was rushed to market at warp speed. They think if they repeat this hypnotic mantra safe and effective enough times, people will believe it. But when it's all said and done, there is going to be at least 35 to 40% of America that simply doesn't buy the talking points. Why? Because they read the reports, ignored or downplayed by the mainstream news outlets about the thousands of deaths and injuries it is causing. The most recent tragedy was a healthy 13-year-old boy in Michigan who died in his sleep after getting the second Pfizer shot. If you're among the millions who fear the vax more than the virus, which is your right, what is the best way to deal with a federal agent who arrives at your door trying to persuade you otherwise? Well, Leo writes, I'm tempted to hold up a picture of Jacob Klinik in silent protest. Jacob Klinik was a healthy 13-year-old before he got jabbed with that. He says, I sought the advice of several constitutional attorneys, and here's what they have to say. John Whitehead said this. He's founder and president of the Charlottesville, Virginia-based Rutherford Institute and has been litigating civil rights cases against the government for more than 45 years. He said, the first thing to remember is that these agents are coming to your house with one purpose in mind. They're there for one reason, to collect information on you, he said. That can't be good for you. They could get that information by questioning you directly or by asking your neighbors to snitch on you. Data collection is out of control. Google, Amazon, Facebook are all collecting personal information on their users, and they are working with the governments of the world in this. So we have to be really careful here, because the government doesn't have a good record on how they use the data they collect. Whitehead advised people to place no trespassing signs at all entry points of their property. You simply ask them to leave. You are under no obligation to answer any of their questions. At the point you ask them to leave your property, they are trespassing. I am telling people to put up no trespassing signs because that makes it easier. But even if you don't have a sign, they are trespassing once you tell them to leave. Think about that. Now, with that said, I have a little video of somebody's interpretation of what to do. I have to admit, I think this is pure genius. Let me see if I can get this to play. And, oh, yes. All right, so hold on. I'm gonna have to boost the speaker a minute. Come on. And I have to pause it. Hold on. This is the joy of trying to do things two different ways. I have to learn how to crank this noise up here.
Okay. I'll move the mic.
And here we go. Now we need to go to community by community, neighborhood by neighborhood, and oftentimes door to door, literally knocking on doors, to get help to the remaining people protected from the virus.
Can I help you?
Oh, hi. I'm with the Biden administration. Do you have a minute for me to tell you about the non-FDA approved injection we desperately want you to get?
Why the hell are you knocking on my door?
I'll take that as a yes. We've been reviewing your medical records, and it appears as though you haven't gotten the...
That's illegal.
Indeed. And what they show is you haven't gotten the shot yet, so I'm here on your private property to pressure you into doing so.
Letting politicians decide what medicines I take is insane. You're not doctors. You're not even qualified.
We're politicians. We like power. And we feel that qualifies us to do whatever we want.
It absolutely doesn't. What I put in my body is my choice, and I'll consult my doctor over that because he knows me personally. Because it's a medical issue.
No, ma'am. This is more of a political issue. You can trust us.
You're part of the government, and you work for me. And you being here is a complete infringement on my rights. You need to read the Constitution.
As a Biden administration, we don't believe in the Constitution. Not really how we want to govern. So you need this shot.
The fact that you really want me to get this thing makes you look really, really suspicious.
Thank you. You don't even know the half of it.
And the more you push this thing, the more I doubt the safety.
Oh, no. When you look at this spreadsheet with our profit margins, you'll see that what we're working with here is totally safe for business. And the long-term clinical trials of an hour and a half are squeaky clean. You have nothing to worry about.
It seems like you just want control.
For your protection, yes. Thank you for seeing. We're just looking out for your best interest with our propaganda campaign, censorship, and now me being here knocking on your door. You're welcome for all that we've been doing.
Are people dumb enough to believe that?
Some are. Now, I would really like to stab you with this needle and inject what's in it that you have no control over into your body.
Absolutely not.
I kind of just want to do it anyway.
My body, my choice, you creep.
That's not the way we see it. At the Biden administration, we look at it as your body, our choice. It's kind of a Bill Cosby-inspired mentality we've adopted.
Get off my property now. Get the off my property.
No. I don't understand. Are you saying you don't want the shot that you've chosen not to get? Wait. While I'm here, do you mind if I confiscate all your guns?
Go ahead and try.
Something to think about. I laugh at this a little bit. Again, it's a spoof. It's made for humor, but... when they're coming to your door, because you made a health care choice for yourself to protect yourself, because that's how you make decisions. You make decisions to protect yourself. And, you know, that the concept that they're going to be coming to your door just kind of blows my mind. Well, I will be once keeping my door shut and refusing to talk. I will put they're not allowed in my apartment building, so too bad for them. You know, this is the insanity. There is a person in my building who is now paralyzed thanks to the COVID shot. Again, this is gene therapy. It is not a vaccination, people. Let's listen to what Pfizer and Moderna are calling this, gene therapy. They do not call it vaccination. Understand that when the companies who are manufacturing this quote, this imaginary protection, they're giving you gene therapy. You remember them saying they're not messing with your genes? Well, why do they call it gene therapy? They say they're not messing with DNA. Why do they call it gene therapy? Think about these things. It's on their website, people. I'm mind blown, where I run into so many people who are, well, you haven't had the shot. Well, you know what? The truth of the matter is, if you've had the shot, you put yourself at risk for blood clots, paralysis,
and a whole bunch more. Pregnant women, particularly in a vulnerable. It goes, I mean, there's so many things. If you will download, I'm telling you, go to cdc.gov. Download the VAERS data, V-A-E-R-S. Download it. Here's what I'm going to tell you to do. If open it with Excel, then if you know how to use the filters, choose the option. You know, there's a column for death. You want to choose yes for that, for the, using the filter. People that have, all the ones that have died. And then put it in order from youngest to oldest. That will horrify you. I know it did me. Because there are preborn children who have died from the virus. There are children who died shortly after birth. They died when their mothers started to feed them their breast milk. And, you know, they're not reporting this in the news. They should be. It's irresponsible. It is disgustingly irresponsible in media not to report these things. It's public knowledge. Anyone can access this material. So the media is not doing their job in protecting you. Now, there is a court case up there on this topic, and I hope to God these people win. They are suing Pfizer and Moderna, I believe, both companies, for not providing informed consent. They're not talking about the actual percentage of people who are damaged as a result of the Pfizer-Moderna gene therapy. Again, they're advertising this as a vaccine. It is gene therapy. They are telling people now, you may need a third shot. You know, I'm meeting people on a regular basis now. I said, hey, you know, I am not getting that third shot. Well, why are they doing this? Again, this all has to do with if you are susceptible enough to be gullible enough to follow these directions, to get that first and second shot, will you be gullible enough to do whatever they tell you? I say these things, and here I am refusing to do these, and you know, it's causing difficulty for me. And I'll say that. There's places where you can't go if you're, quote, not vaccinated. You can't go places without a mask sometimes if you can't have proof that you're vaccinated. Again, I live in Libland, New York. It's more restrictive than most places, but there are other states that are worse. Yeah, you know, we'll talk about California and you know, la-la land out there, but this is not that bad. There are companies that have to fight. There are unions that are fighting the mandating of the gene therapy. They're mandating a gene therapy. And unions are fighting this. It is extremely important they fight this because, as the woman said, my body, my choice. Doesn't that sound familiar? Have we heard somebody else say that? Well, we're agreeing with that term then. Because you know what? We're talking about that, putting a shot in your body. It's your body. We're not talking about getting rid of another body. You're talking about your body. Let's go on. We'll get into the UK. Most COVID deaths are among, this is from the UK, most COVID deaths are among the vaccinated. Did you hear that? Does that mean the vaccination doesn't work? The gene therapy doesn't work? And you know what? The funny thing is when I have had friends go get this shot, this gene therapy, that some people, that the government has called a vaccine. They go and get this gene therapy, and what are they told when they're about to get the shot? It doesn't guarantee you won't get COVID. Oh, it could be worse. This Delta variant could kill you, even if you get the shot. So the question is, why do they want you to get the shot? Again,
this reason why I'm asking this one. So if you have had COVID, my son has, if you have had COVID, you survived it, you have natural immunities, which are stronger than, quote, gene therapy. And they don't let you go to the ball game where they'll just let vaccinated people go. No, but because you have a natural immunity, oh, my gosh, no, they don't want you to come. But if you have the shot, so this has nothing to do with creating immunity. If it was, they would reward both. But they're not, people. Pay attention. So let's talk again about this problem in the UK. Again, it says most COVID deaths in England now are the vaccinated. This is in theconversation.com. More vaccinated people, okay, gene therapy, people have received gene therapy, are dying of COVID than unvaccinated people, according to a recent report from the Public Health England. The report shows that 163 of the 257 who died of the Delta variant within 28 days of a positive COVID test between February 1st and June 21st had received at least one dose of the vaccine. At last glance, this may seem alarming, but it is exactly as we expect, as would be expected. Here's a simple thought experiment. Imagine everyone is now fully vaccinated with COVID vaccines, which are excellent but can't save all lives. Some people who get infected with COVID will still die. Well, again, a vaccination is supposed to prevent things like that. Think about it. Think about it. Again, it's not a vaccine. It is a gene therapy. Again, it says it can't save all lives. Some people who get infected with COVID will still die. All these people will be fully vaccinated, 100%. That doesn't mean vaccines aren't effective at reducing death. Oh, how about, are the vaccines causing death? They're not asking that question. I wonder why. These are not vaccines. They are gene therapies. The risk of dying from COVID doubles roughly every 7 years. Whoa, how do they know that? Think about that. The risk of dying of COVID doubles roughly every 7 years older a patient. Well, that's probably true. The 35-year difference between a 35-year-old and a 70-year-old means the risk of death between the two patients has doubled 5 times. Equivalent, it has increased by a factor of 32. Okay, we already know. We don't need the statistics to tell us the stats. The older you are, the more likely you are to die if you get COVID. You know, that's true of the flu. It's true of a lot of different things. The older you are, the more or less likely you'll have those abilities to fight off things. They're selling us stuff. It's not something we don't know. The reason why it's getting – this is – they're not asking the questions that need to be asked. But they are saying that people who are getting sick of the, quote, Delta variant, it's interesting that those people who have had the vaccine – oh, sorry, the gene therapy are among the most hit. Is there something attractive in the gene therapy that makes the Delta variant seek them out? Is their body more susceptible? They're not asking those questions. You have to ask why. Now, one of those questions was asked in that article. Those are the important questions that any reasonable journalist would ask. Yeah. Again, if you don't ask questions, how do you learn? This is one of the crazy things. You know, I sit here and I marvel at that they aren't discussing these important things. I just can't understand when they don't ask important questions. How can they keep so silent and not know this information, not find the information important? I marvel when people hide this information. Why? Why would you hide information like this? These are things I will never, ever be able to understand. Let's see now. I got another article I want to pull up. I'm just debating on which one because there's so many this week. Here we go. And let's see, get right to the article. And I might have gotten this one last week. No, I don't think so. We talked about we've been talking about this guy who stabbed a rabbi in Boston. What they hadn't said really is he's an Egyptian, that we told you he was Muslim. Egyptian who stabbed Boston rabbi. This came out in the Daily Mail 8 times outside a synagogue, said all Jews are stingy and evil. And as he is charged with hate crimes for his blood, you know, this is while he's being charged for hate crimes, he says these things. This is by Farbarov for the Daily Mail. It came out last week. The Egyptian national, who authorities said pulled a gun on a Boston rabbi and stabbed him 8 times outside a Jewish school last week on Thursday, was charged with hate crimes. Actually 2 weeks ago this happened, was charged with hate crimes after prosecutors claimed the suspect referred to all Jews as stingy and evil. Where did he get that information? Could it be Nazis? Oh, did Nazis and someone by the name of Hassan al-Banabi work together? Yeah, Hassan al-Banam admired Hitler. Oh, so does that sound familiar? Do they think the same things? Absolutely. Wow. I mean, think about this. Wow. Yeah, so all Jews are stingy and evil is what he's saying. And this is, you know, at his prosecution. So he's already set the case up for hate crime. He wants that prosecution is what I believe. On last Thursday, the Office of Suffolk County District Attorney Rachel Collins charged Awad with civil rights violations, causing injury and bodily injury and intimidation. According to the prosecution, people who knew Awad said he harbored biased views towards several racial groups, including whites and blacks, but he was especially harsh on Jews. Awad, who was previously described by his former roommate as a violent anti-Semite, did not tolerate having his views challenged and would grow angry. Oh, well, he believes his views are based on the Quran. And you can't question Sharia. You can't question Islam. It's not allowed. That could make you an apostate if you're questioning it. Think about this. I mean, people, some of these things you just have to sit there and go, why? Well, if you don't ask the questions. This is if you don't ask the questions, you can't learn. You've got to ask the questions. This is one of the things I can't understand when people do not ask the questions. Ugh. Here we go. Here's a new one. This came out the 13th. Islamic State conspirator. NIA conducts multiple raids in Kashmir and detains 6. This comes from the AsianAge.com. Sprinagar. National Investigation Agency on Sunday conducted raids at multiple locations across Kashmir Valley and arrested 6 people, including the head of an Islamic seminary, in connection with a jihadi terrorism case. The agency said that the case was registered by in June 29th the year under various sections of the Indian Penal Code and Unlawful Activities Prevention Act in 1967 in conjunction with the conspiracy of ISIS, the Islamic State, to radicalize and recruit impressionable youth in the country to wage violent jihad against the Indian state. This comes a day after the JK government sacked its 11 employees, including 2 sons of Hizbul Mujahideen chief Muhammad Yusuf Shah, alias Saeed Salahuddin, on charges of being involved in anti-India activities. His chief's sons were fired based on their investigations done by the NIA in an alleged terror funding case. The NIA sources said that its teams, assisted by J&K Police and Central Reserve Police Force, raided Siraj ul-Ulum Seminary in Srinagar's Dalal Mahalla area and seized some office records and laptop, and also took its chairman, Adnan Ahmad Nadvi, into custody. The institution is reportedly affiliated with an Islamic seminary at Uttar Pradesh. Soon raids were conducted in Pushrus, Sunsuma, and Akbal villages, and Anantag, and 5 persons identified as Javed, Ahmad Mir, and Umar Bhatt. Ovais Ahmad Bhatt and Tanvir Ahmad Bhatt and Zeeshan Amin Balink were detained. The NIA in a statement here said the searches were conducted at 7 locations. Keep listening. I mean, when you, they're, okay, 7 locations, they're catching these guys. What do they have in common? They all have Islam in common. They're okay with killing Jews. They're okay with killing Hindus. Yes, and this is okay with them. Well, they've been doing it for hundreds of years, people. How do you think when is much of India became Muslim at one point? It was because the Muslims and their conquering. One of the things that they would do is they would go in and they, again, you hear about these horrible things when they're, if you were over 50, you heard about this when you were going to high school, these horrible tragedies that happened when Muslims conquered. You conquered, and then you gave people a choice. Well, before you conquered, you gave them a choice. Submit and become Muslim or die or pay the, you know, pay the jizya. Well, there's no jizya for polytheists, so they just kill them. What they would do is go into these cities and these areas where Hindus were living. You say convert or die, and what they would still do after they won, after they got in there, is they would destroy the idols, and then they would smash them into little pieces and put them as the stones in their walkway. Now, that's been done for centuries, people, and, you know, it happened recently, and people are like, that's not Islamic. Well, it's entirely Islamic. It's entirely Islamic. It's in their history. They've been doing this for centuries. I'm always seems to be, I can't even get into how shocked I am some of these things are normal. Let's go to Bangladesh. Now, this article from Bangladesh I found interesting. Why? Oh, why did I find it interesting? Well, in Bangladesh, 5 members of this Neo-JMB banned militant outfit were arrested. This is by English.NewsTrackLive.com. by PC Thomas. It came out on the 12th. Dhaka Metropolitan Police on this Monday arrested 5 members of the Neo-JMB banned militant outfit in Bangladesh. IED making materials were also seized during multiple raids, of a top official said. Mohammed Asudazaman, chief of the DM Terrorism and Transnational Crime Unit, said that while 3 of the militants were arrested on July 8th, the remaining 2 were held on Sunday. The militants who were arrested on Sunday were identified as IED maker Abdullah Al-Mamun, alias David Killer, and Major Osama, alias Naeem, a militant trainer. The raids were carried out on Sunday night as a militant hideout in Arahazar district, where officials also refused 3 IED defused 3 IED bombs. And a huge quantity of explosives were also seized from the den. The second raid on a house also ended at around 4 a.m. in the morning. According to the chief of the counterterrorism unit, Naeem was also a bomb-making instructor and used to lead the prayers at a mosque. So this imam is a IED builder. Oh, he's a bomb builder. Oh, he has his second job making IEDs, distributing jihadi literature and equipment and remotes. And again, there were remotes also recovered during the operation. So what did they, this raid saved a lot of lives. What was that imam going to do with those, with that bomb material? Wow. Hi, Boyd. Thank you for joining us. Bring it on, Boyd. Think about this. The truth is a lot more shocking. What were they going to do with those bombs? They were going to kill non-Muslims. Did it matter who they were? No, they were just non-Muslims. Did they care who they were? No, they're following the Sharia. It's in there, people. Go buy yourself a copy of Reliance of the Traveler. You want more detailed information on these, on what we're seeing, you want to pick up my latest book, The Cancer of Civilization Jihad, which is now on Amazon for $20. I'm saying go there and buy this. Why? Because
all your questions about these behaviors. I'm not saying I answer all the questions about behaviors, but there are 20 specific behaviors I address, from the hijra to the topic of women, how are women treated, all the way to jihad. I talk about constitutional issues. It's there. People, it's time to wake up and start doing things for yourself, like reading and doing your own research. Find out if what you're hearing is true. One of the things I'm upset, when I talk about this, doing your own research, I do a lot of it myself. All right. And I will admit, there are times I consult with people that are better experts than myself. Sometimes they're kind of like me. They don't like to call themselves experts. The only thing I can say I'm an expert is in civilization jihad. That field, I am a federally, in that area, I'm a federally recognized expert. I wrote an affidavit on when the Syrians were coming into South Carolina. It's important to tell the truth when you're writing your affidavit. I wrote an affidavit, 20, 30 pages long, I cannot remember how long, and submitted it to a federal court to stop the Syrian refugees from coming in. And it was accepted uncontested, which makes me a federally recognized expert on civilization jihad. Okay, so that's where my expertise lies. I called a friend who is the local expert on CRT. She doesn't like being called an expert. Well, she's still learning. Well, that's the funny thing about us experts. We never feel like we know enough. We have to keep learning more. That's the crazy thing. When you're a research writer, when you're into research, you keep reading and to learn what you don't know so you can learn what you don't know. And that's part of what we do. Why we don't like to be called experts? Because we know we don't know a lot. I mean, person who might look and say, oh, you do know a lot more than we do. Well, yeah, that might be true, but it's hard for us. It's hard for us to admit something like that we could be an expert when we feel like we don't. We realize how much we don't know. That's the huge part. So glad to have you, Cajun. Thanks for joining us. The truth of things is a lot scarier sometimes when it gets rolled out and put in public. Let me get on to my next article. Let's see here. I've been watching what's been happening in Egypt, and I've been really unsure what is happening. So if you're paying attention to the news, Egypt has been making deals with Turkey, and Turkey has been making deals with Egypt. The deal Turkey is making with Egypt has silenced. This is great. What's happening? I'm still not sure how to take this. Turkey has been, you know, kind of schmoozing Egypt. Now, Egypt's saying, look, if you want to be friends with us, we will not trust you unless you silence your Muslim Brotherhood entities. And slowly but surely, I talked about this last week, Turkey has been doing this slowly. In fact, last week, they silenced much of the Muslim Brotherhood news entities or broadcasts. I'm cautious. I don't think that will last. That's my personal belief, but I don't know. Something that Erdogan wants from Egypt must be incredibly important. Either that, if somebody has a new bit of control over Erdogan to silence the Muslim Brotherhood. I have no idea. A couple of countries that are trying to schmooze with Egypt, and Egypt saying, hey, we don't play. You do this part, we'll do everything, you know, together. Just get rid of your Muslim Brotherhood. Silence them. Well, in that light, the government of Egypt has now passed a law, which kind of blows our mind that hasn't been passed earlier. They can now legally fire anyone from the government who is affiliated with the Ikhwan, which is the Muslim Brotherhood. If you know the history of the Muslim Brotherhood, you'll know that they were involved in the killing. The assassination plots on Egyptian presidents. Anwar Sadat is thought to have been an actual assassin for the Muslim Brotherhood, much less having possibly been assassinated by them. Because what did he do? He gave them freedom,
And then they came out and they started to do things again, and he tried to shut them up again. Well, didn't work so well. So that's, I mean, there's a whole bunch of possibles on this. So I'm not saying I have the solution that it was Iquan, but there's a lot of evidence it likely was. So that's just a possible. But now they have made it legal to fire all members, people who affiliate with the Muslim Brotherhood from any governmental structure in Egypt. I think that's great, because if you really believe somebody's a terrorist or a danger to your country, get rid of them. Okay. Kick them out, especially putting them in a place of influence like a government job. No. I'm mind blown on that one. Let's talk about the judge that was recently put in. There's a judge who claims, when he was going through his hearing, he's claiming that he doesn't know what Sharia was. Sharia. I sat there and listened to this. Now, Jamie, it wasn't Jamie. Let me pull that up. I listen to an awful lot of things, people. I mean, I try to keep up. I am so far behind in my emails. I can't even get into how, I mean, there's a possibility I may end up being interviewed right after the show is over tonight because I haven't been able to keep up with my emails. I'm not even sure. Trying to keep up with stuff that's happening is extremely important. You have to pay attention. Let me see if I can pull this up. I thought it was today, but let me see, Jamie. And it's not there. Cyrus, that's what it was. Annie Cyrus did a video this week about the judge. And here we go. I'm going to play this for you. Now, I think the article, I think the video says it all. And, you know, we get told, I talk about how Muslims will lie. This judge got caught. Annie Cyrus blows it. She blows him up. She caught it. So I'm just going to play this. Just pay attention. I'm going to turn the mic. So here we go.
This is a fan-generated show. If you'd like to support us, please go to jamieblackoff.com. Also, don't forget to subscribe to our new Rumble channel. All your support is greatly appreciated.
Hello and welcome to Cyrus Moments, brought to you by the Glanzol Gang. This video is actually a follow-up to my very recent article published on frontpagemag.com. I encourage you to please go and check it out, because I think everyone in America should not only read that article, but also ask the same questions that is mentioned in that article. But I decided to do a follow-up on a video, a short video. I promise it's not going to be long, so don't go anywhere. If you read the article, I just bring up certain questions, such as Judge Qureshi making history, being confirmed by Senate as the first Muslim federal judge with a lifetime position. What kind of Muslim? Muslim just because he was born into a Pakistani Muslim family, Muslim because he's practicing Islam. Now, here's where we go from being a Muslim and understanding Islam. Let's take it to the next level. As I said, follow up. Next level is, when he was questioned, actually, you know what, let's take a look at the question. Here, let's take a look at it.
Mr. Qureshi, you too have had quite a background in the law, on the military side, civil criminal side as well. I'm going to follow up with a question which I'm almost embarrassed to ask, but only because I've heard it from other members of this committee time to time, and it's likely to come up at some point. What do you know about Sharia law?
I don't know anything about that, Chairman.
So Judge Qureshi is a Muslim who has absolutely no idea. He knows nothing about Sharia. What? Okay, first of all, as an ex-Muslim, I can guarantee you that you cannot be a Muslim with zero knowledge of Sharia. You may not know at all, but you're very much used to Sharia. Very much. You know, when you do your prayer and how you get married and how you do your prayer wash up and your zakat and your taxes and all that is Sharia. But you know how I'm a biased Islamophobe, so let's not take my word for it as an excellent probably bad experiences. Let's take a look at the follow-up answer he gives.
If the question, too, is whether I would apply the laws of the United States in the state of New Jersey, I can tell you in 21 years of practicing law as a federal prosecutor, as a military officer in the United States Army, as a defense attorney and partner at a prestigious law firm in New Jersey, and a United States magistrate judge, I've never even been asked the question. That being said, I know probably less about it than you do, and I don't know anything about it.
Okay. This is very interesting, Judge Qureshi. You see, if I would walk out of my house right this very moment, I have a feeling most likely even the CVS pharmacist across the street would know if I said, do you know anything about Sharia? They would be like, yeah, it's something Islamic. That's it. But it is interesting that you know nothing about Sharia, but you do know why the question was asked, that would you uphold the Constitution and American law over Sharia being Islamic law? That is interesting for someone who knows nothing about Sharia. You sure know what it stands for, don't you? I'm pretty sure if you didn't know anything about Sharia at all, you wouldn't follow up by saying, if you're asking that question to see if I'm going to apply American law, if you don't know anything about Sharia, how do you know Sharia is Islamic law? That is superior to law of the land. I love how you contradicted yourself. And funny enough, you didn't even answer your own question that you brought up, because I didn't hear you saying, of course I will uphold the Constitution. Let's listen one more time.
If the question, too, is whether I would apply the laws of the United States in the state of New Jersey, I can tell you in 21 years of practicing law as a federal prosecutor, as a military officer in the United States Army, as a defense attorney and partner at a prestigious law firm in New Jersey, and a United States magistrate judge, I've never even been asked the question.
See, you brought up the question, and then your answer to your own question, which was contradiction to your original answer of I don't know anything about Sharia, was that has never even been a question. Well, Doreen, just because it has never been a question doesn't mean you get away with not answering the question. It's a genuine question. Do you know Sharia? Apparently you don't. Now the question is, when it comes to it, Judge Qureshi, are you going to uphold the U.S. Constitution or are you going to follow Sharia, a.k.a. Islamic law, that is, in fact, superior to the law of the land when it comes to America, because it does go against what Allah and Muhammad said. On that note, make sure to subscribe to our channel on Rumble. Look up Blazoff Gang on Rumble, because I am going to do more and more follow-ups on Judge Qureshi and his connection to Sharia, to Islamic society, and every other thing that he is avoiding the answers. Why? I don't know, but I'll make sure to bring you more questions that could be asked. And we just hope that one day somebody's going to answer. Thank you so much for watching.
Go to MyPillow.com and use code GG21 to get incredible and amazing discounts. Or just call 1-800-854-0673.
So, I love Annie Cyrus. I've actually had a chance to meet her a couple of times, and I think her work is outstanding. I'm always amazed that people, for some reason, don't pay attention, and they don't catch these things. And that's why you need people like us out here trying to do what's right. Annie Cyrus is pointing out these horrible truths that we really wish that weren't true. I mean, it's the honest fact of it. We would really like them not to be true.
Here's another article. Comes from Austria. And now, I find this one kind of shocking. It was reported under Jihad Watch as in Austria, Muslims storm into man's apartment, beat him up. Authorities forbid the victim from entering his own apartment. Okay, you get beat up in your own apartment by Muslims storming it, and then you're not allowed to go to your own apartment? Why? Let's read this. And this is the translated version, so bear with me. You know, translation via Google is just not always as nice as it could be. Rudolf B. no longer understands the world and the rule of law. The Viennese vocational school teacher was beaten up in his apartment by his neighbor's brothers until he was hospitalized. Nevertheless, according to the authorities' orders, the teacher is not allowed to enter his home. Arbitrary authorities or justified? The entry ban applies for at least 10 days, but could be extended. The background story. After the neighbor's son spat on his car, he confronts the boy's mother. A heated argument arises between him and the native Pakistani. Oh, so preference is given to the Pakistani. He didn't do any assault. The teacher goes back to his apartment. Shortly after the doorbell rings, two of the woman's brothers storm in. One smashes his jaw 5 days. AKH. The police can quickly locate the perpetrators. Advertisements. At large. In his sickbed, Rudolf learns that the entry ban has been imposed on him. He must not approach the neighbor within 100 meters, and his apartment is in the exclusion zone. Why the ban? According to the interrogation protocol, he strangled and hit the woman. The educator swears stone and bone. I never touched her. Indeed, questions remain unanswered. For example, whether a medical officer has examined the person concerned. There is nothing about it in the official file. The police are blocking all inquiries in this regard. Data protection. So Rudolph gets a lawyer. The thugs are running around freely, and I'm not allowed into my apartment. Madness, he says. Well, you know what? This is the submission to Sharia that we keep seeing. This is what Sharia, the civilization jihad is. They're coming in. They take over. They get special privileges. Well, now they got a special privilege. They can assault you, and you're not allowed in your own house. And that's happening. That is happening in Austria. Yeah. Things that just make you go, why? I mean, how can this stuff be happening? How can it be real? I listen to some of these things. I go, no, it can't be possible. I'm reading this stuff every day, and I'm still saying, how could that be? It's happening. It's shocking, and it is happening. Let's see. I've got another one here. Is anybody paying attention to Afghanistan about how the Taliban has been taking back over? We kind of expected this when we left. It was kind of a no-brainer that it was going to happen. But have you heard how they are ruling things? Well, girls are going to be back to having less education and more restricted education. Of course, under Islam, that's because in Islam, women are just not treated as equals. I mean, you can't have women treated as equals when Muhammad says hell is filled with them. If that's the case, if hell is filled with women, again, we have to go with what does Islam teach?
This is the awful truth.
Islam. I'm not saying Muslims. I am saying the faith structure known as Islam teaches these things.
I have not said anything different.
Do I think all Muslims are horrible? No, I think Islam is horrible. As a whole, it's dangerous. Don't let your children near it. And I'm not going to stop saying that. When you learn the stuff that Islam teaches, it takes away the rights of even the Muslims. The people who suffer the most from Islam are Muslims, the followers of Islam. They learn to hate.
They learn to hate so much they can't even stop from killing each other.
What do I mean? In Islam, if you are not Muslim enough, they can consider you an apostate, and they can kill you.
If you have a child, this is why you see something called honor deaths, honor killings. They're not honorable at all. The people who commit these acts are committing these acts of murder because they are condoned by Sharia.
People, and I keep saying it, buy my book, The Cancer of Civilization Jihad. If you're not as shocked as I was when I was writing it and finding this information, you probably have been reading for quite a long time and staying informed. But I mean, even as someone who's pretty informed, the more I learn, the more it's just not good. Here's another article. This one's from Sweden by Denny Abrahamson, and it came out in Jihad Watch. This has been out since the 11th. He writes, in 2017, I was reported by a snitch after comments, reported as a snitch after comments he made in a closed Facebook group calling Islam a fascist ideology and Muhammad a pedophile. Well, if you marry a six-year-old girl and you have sex with her when she's nine, what else are you? Again, that's documented in Islamic sources. Yes, it's documented in Islamic sources. And you know what? I have met a Muslim who disagrees with it. I've met Muslims who say, no, she was older. Are you lying to me or are you stupid? Well, it doesn't say that. Oh, yes, it does. Oh, my gosh. I have to sit there and laugh when I run people who say, no, she's older. Hey, no, she wasn't. In fact, she might even be younger in some ways because those are lunar years. Oh. Well, how many months younger would she be? I want you to think about that. She got married at six by lunar years. No, they don't want to talk about that. Okay. Lunar and solar, we're missing a couple of months there between, yeah, pay attention. All right. Poor guy is getting accused of, in Sweden they have a law of prohibiting incitement against an ethnic group, he says. Islam is regarded as an ethnic group, but I was lucky, he writes, and got acquitted. So the prosecutor appealed against the verdict of the court to court appeals, and he won again. Unfortunately, however, the matter didn't end there. The law dates from 1948, and its purpose was to stop anti-Semitism. It was also meant to protect homosexuals and other minority groups, so the law was completely justified. In 1999, the Swedish Social Democrats made a secret agreement with Islamic groups with ties to the Muslim Brotherhood to replace the support they had lost from Swedish working classes with votes from Muslim immigrants. To get these votes, they promised to give Muslims positions in municipalities, town and councils, and parliament. After that, the law prohibited incitement, more or less became a Sharia law, used to stop criticism of Islam, particularly as the judiciary has become very left-leaning. No surprise there. Sweden is a socialist country. Well, many Muslim rapists, he continues, and gang members get very soft sentences, and very few of them get deported, even if they don't have Swedish citizenship. There is also a group called Online Hate Reviewer, which scans social media for racist comments about immigrants. Such comments are published mostly by retired people. Swedish people are very scared of being labeled racist, as they can lose jobs and friends, so young people are mostly quiet. The group gets taxpayer money from the government. Shortly after he won this writer won the appeal, he says the same snitch reported me again for other comments on Facebook. The odd thing is that I made the comments in another country, but if comments are directed towards a Swedish audience, they fall under Swedish law, even if you write them in a closed group of people who share the same opinions. This time in June of 2018, I was questioned by a Turkish woman whom he suspected, he writes, as he is suspected as a Muslim, but she refused to answer when he asked her. It was very unfriendly hearing, he says, and she also had spent a great deal of time going through his Facebook account, mapping his children with names and pictures. His youngest son was upset by this. I want you to think about that.
The government has all this information today. Sweden's not pulling anything surprising in doing this.
And, you know, we know this. When you put pictures up of your kids, I mean, I'm not saying I don't. I love my kids, and I like to share. But Facebook has become a place of sharing. It's scary that we have to think about these things. But reality is often not as kind as we'd like. Pay attention, people. Pay attention to what's happening around you. I want to keep going. I only have a few more stories because I have been did not spend enough time getting things ready for you, unfortunately. Here we go. This one is from Israel. And let's get the article up. Come on. I found this incredibly stupid. I guess I would say bad form. it says, PA freezing of money for terrorists is racism. This is in the Eretz Yeshiva. Senior PA official calls Bennett government decision to freeze terrorist funds racist behavior. Racist? Let's see. If you don't give us money that we pay terrorists with, you're racist. So you want to get money to pay people who do murders. Is that true? So, I mean, by the government giving money, unfreezing the money, so you can pay people to murder and kill and maim and steal or whatever, you're committing a crime if you release the money. Oh. So how is this even close? Again, I live in Libland, New York. I've met teachers who actually believe this insanity, where it's, you know, it's, they would call it racism. Let me read the article. Qadri Abu Bakr, the head of the Palestinian Authority's Prisoner Affairs Commission, condemned the decision by the Israeli cabinet to freeze the funds transferred by the Palestinian Authority to terrorists and their families. Ooh, doesn't that sound like the right choice when you think about it? The cabinet decided on Sunday to deduct the amount the PA pays terrorists and their families from the taxes and tariffs collected by their PA by Israel. According to the decision, the deduction amounted to a total of 597 million shekels, which the National Bureau of Counterterror Financing in the Defense Ministry reported with the sum of PA funds allotted towards indirect support of terrorism in 2020. The law stipulates that Israel may begin deducting 1/12 of the sum of money based on a monthly basis. In a response, Abu Bakr called the Israeli cabinet's decision a racist behavior and a policy of robbery of some of the state's funds, estimated at millions of shekels. He stressed that the decision would only increase the Palestinian Authority's determination to support the fighters who sacrificed their lives and souls in defending the homeland. So now I doubt that. Here's what could happen. And Palestinian Authority, again, pays the people who do the attacks, pays the family of the people who serve, the people who are the family members of those who die doing these attacks. So if they're not going to get paid, will there be less attacks? Absolutely, there will be less. You know, is there a possibility they might start caring for their children more? Well, we're not going to get paid if they kill themselves, so yeah, maybe they might start protecting their children. Think about these things. I mean, they've been paying parents for the sacrifice of their children.
It is a horrible, horrible thing when a government pays to sacrifice a child.
No, when you're a soldier, it's one thing. But Palestine isn't even a country. It is a, you know, the truth is Palestine is a name of an area in the world that was created, the name was created by Romans to insult the Jews. They called it the land of the Philistines. Yeah, and if you meet a Palestinian who can actually pronounce Palestine correctly, have a good laugh, because it's not going to happen. unless they speak English, they are not going to be able to say Palestine. They'll be saying the F word, phallus. And when you say, okay, if you're going to call it Palestine, maybe you've got the right term. uh,
you don't know what a phallus is, look it up.
They want to call it Phallistine. All power to them. I can agree with that name. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's the truth of the matter. I mean, there are, if that's what they really want to call it, and I'll pronounce it correctly, okay. But that fits. Palestine, if you're calling yourself Palestinians, that means you must be Jews. Oh, does it sound too insulting to you, people who live in that area? Well, hey, I'm not the one calling myself Palestinian. You're the one making the claim. That means you must be Jewish. And learn your history, people. And let's see. I think I did this one last week. Yep. Sometimes when I try to keep up, I beat Jihad Watch. Sometimes when I don't, it's kind of hard to tell. Jihad Watch does really good in staying right on target and keeping up. They're hard to beat as far as staying on target. They are extremely, extremely good on staying on target and getting stuff ready. I think I can share this one. This one comes from Germany. Some of these things. A planned attack in Munich. Ali Reza K wanted to kill many people on Marienplatz. This article came out the 10th. It was only with luck that Munich escaped a catastrophe in May of 2020. A 26-year-old Afghan wanted to speed into the pedestrian zone between Stachus and Marienplatz in a powerful car and cause a bloodbath. Now, the trial began against the, quote, mentally ill man, who is said to have acted out, they call it Islamist. I'm just going to call it Islamic motives. The parallels to the knife attack in Würzburg are terrifying. On May 10th of 2020, the Bavarian capital of Munich apparently only narrowly escaped disaster, according to investigators by the Munich Public Prosecutor's Office. The 26-year-old Ali Reza K, who was born in Iran and is an Afghan citizen, wanted to cause a bloodbath in the city center. He had planned to speed into the pedestrian zone between Stachus and Marienplatz in a powerful car and kill as many people as possible by running them over. Project failed because despite several attempts, the man did not succeed in hijacking a vehicle by force. Armed with a kitchen knife about 30 centimeters long and presumably with a massive iron hammer, he robbed a total of four cars that were waiting at a red light. He is said to have shouted Allah Akbar, God is greatest, several times and hit the windows of the cars, but the drivers were able to flee and thus prevent worse. For the public prosecutor's office, it's clear. The accused acted for, again, they're saying Islamist, it's Islamic motives. The trial of Ali Reza K, who is, quote, mentally ill, had been treated in a specialist clinic for over half a year and began on Friday at the Munich Regional Court. He suffers from paranoid schizophrenia, has delusions. There are many indicators that he committed the act in a state of diminished capacity. It says diminished, if not eliminated, guilty capacity. He was most likely unable to see the wrongdoing and act on that insight. If you feel this man is that dangerous, keep him locked up. What kind of a psychiatrist would not make this guy stay locked up if he felt that he was that dangerous? That's Germany. Again, he's not even a citizen of Germany. So is this the kind of person you think should become a citizen of Germany? If not, kick him out. Protect your people. No, can't protect your own. These are the things that make me go, why? I can't figure out Europe. I mean, I can visit. I don't want to stay there because they do not protect their own. Here in the United States, we protect our own. That's the thing we do. It's crazy. I never cease to be amazed that there are certain people, groups, who do not protect their own children or their own families or their own country. I can't understand that. I talked with a pastor this week about Nigeria, and I have to say I have new insight that I've never had about Nigeria. I'm rather shocked. he talks about, well, you know, the Muslims are taking over northern Nigeria, and yes, the president of Nigeria is with them. But the southern part of the country, he says, is Christian. So we should have two countries. In my mind, I'm thinking, okay. So, I mean, I'm thinking of that phrase, "United we stand." United we stand. When they're not united, how can they stand? Can they stand together as a southern group? Can they create that second country? I hope they can, but if they can't stand united, there is nothing for them to stand against Islam. I hope that they are able to defend their own. I mean, they'll need weapons, they'll need more. I'm not saying anything different. But I really am surprised. I didn't expect that. I've got a lot to learn about other countries. I'm not saying I have all the answers. But when a country doesn't stand together, it falls. Right now, we are in that part where the country is falling. We are not standing together. We have allowed communists to infiltrate our schools from the colleges all the way through, from Islam to do this as well. So our country is falling. So here we have another problem. We have the same problem. The country is failing. It is falling. Until we get rid of some of these issues, until we stop saying we can't teach that evil is good, we stop teaching things about, we stop teaching our children lies, if we don't stop doing these things, we're in trouble. Well, I'm going to say goodnight just a little bit early. Reason I'm going to do that is I'm running out of stories, I'm running out of gas, and I have to say I am shocked that there's not enough, what's the right way to put this? There's not enough people standing up and doing what's right. I'm tired of people becoming the innocent bystander. Let me tell you a story, a personal story about me. When I was a teenager, I found this walking down the street, I should say riding my bike down the street, and this guy pulls out a knife on me. You know, I lived in suburbia, so the knife was a total surprise. Never thought about something like that happening. And as the guy has a knife on me, people start to walk by like they don't see anything. And I stopped and I say, hey, next time someone pulls a knife on you, I'm walking by, pretending I don't see anything too. They stop and they look. And the guy takes off. I can't believe you did that, he says, and runs off. Well, being an innocent bystander means you're not innocent. There's no such thing as an innocent bystander. An innocent bystander is a cowardly, evil person. Evil because they do nothing. You can't live like that and call yourself a man. You can't do that. You're standing against God in every way. So I will stand against that kind of thing. It's don't live like that. Stand up, say what's right, get informed. I have not been posting as much news as I would like into the Sutliffian Report lately. Just been very, very busy. I've got a new project I'm working on, and I hope to be sharing that with you soon. I'm hoping to go do some interviewing of experts so I can get that information to you. I'm learning a lot still. What does that mean? The truth of the matter is you got to keep feeding yourself new information. You got to keep learning. Start telling the truth to those people who don't want to hear it. Why? Because sometime they'll get it. Sometimes they won't. But if you keep giving the same message, that's important. As an educator, I can tell you that is so important. That same message, that consistency, that carries an incredibly important message. Stand up, do what is right. Stop being the panty waist bystander. Being a person that says, oh, well, they're dealing coke down there or crack down there. I can't say anything. No. Okay. When you call, it doesn't mean that they're going to report your address. No. It's important to be the one who stands up.
You have to be that person. As a Christian, you can't not be that person. That's what I'm getting at. It's that important. You can't be quiet. You can't live being quiet. I can't live being quiet. So without further ado, I'm going to send us off with Toby Keith.
American girls and American guys, we'll always stand up and salute. We'll always recognize when we see your glory flying. There's a lot of men dead, so we can sleep in peace at night when we lay down our heads. My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard till the day that he died. He wanted my mother, my brother, my sister and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole of the red, white, and blue. Justice will be served and the battle will rage. This big dog will fight when you rattle his cage. You'll be sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. Cause we'll put a boot in your ass, it's the American way. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be hell when you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell. And it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down.